Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5, 51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd, 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season. Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the Playbook for a Wednesday. How we doing, kids? John Rook with you here on Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio. We got some fun stuff today. This is going to be some good stuff. I didn't realize that nobody wanted to really talk about the Cincinnati Bengals today. And I think there is probably some truth to what I was just talking about with Tom and Andy and Paul, and the fact that, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of complacency set in around here and probably around where you are, the Patriots continue to beat the crap out of people. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't keep an interest in your team. I mean, let's face it, if things are going well here, then this team is probably on its way to doing something that very few teams ever get a chance to do. First of all, the ultimate would be, you know, winning 4 Super Bowls in 7 years. The second thing of all is, of course, what we've all already talked about maybe ad nauseum, and that, you know, everybody around here wants to, you know, shoot darts in you when you mention, you know, 16-0 or 19-0. That obviously has got to be the, you know, the carrot on the stick at the end of the line here that this team continues to try to work itself toward week in and week out. You try to put blinders on. You try to go week to week. You try to focus on the task at hand, and the guys are out there practicing right now as I speak. Walk right by the practice fields and watch for a couple of moments before, you know, you get started getting the evil eye, and then it's like, okay, time to move on here. But they're already preparing for the Bengals, even though the game isn't until next Monday. They're doing their jobs. And as followers and those who cover the team here, it's time for us to kind of take a look at that and also have some fun along the same lines and see if we can't, as I suggested earlier, nitpick. We did a little nitpicking on Tuesday yesterday, and we'll probably continue to try to turn Tuesdays into Nitpick Tuesday just a bit to give you a chance to vent or ask questions about a part of the team or a facet of the team that you're just not quite kosher with, for lack of a better phrase. And, of course, we'll take those questions from you whenever you have them formulate in your minds. And you can always send the emails right here to the program, webradio@patriots.com. And the phone lines are open as well, 508-543-7482. Now, today's show is going to be special because we've got someone coming onto the program who you know. My guess is at some point in time, if you're a longtime football fan, you might have even seen play this game, and he played it at a pretty high level. He is one of the more popular personalities on the ESPN television network, and the one and only Jaws, Ron Jaworski, will be joining us in approximately 20 to 25 minutes from now. So you want to stay tuned for that.
Jaws.
That's right. Jaws himself, Ron Jaworski. And in our 3 o'clock hour today, Jeff Hobson, who covers the Bengals for Bengals.com, he will join us, and we'll see if the Patriots are getting any run in the Queen City in Cincinnati, Ohio, thus far. We'll try to get inside the Bengals for a bit toward the end of the 3 o'clock hour with Jeff Hobson. So that's what we have coming up on the program for you today. Woohoo! Sounds like a pretty good day, right? In the meantime, I need to hear from you. Webradio@patriots.com. I have some cleanup business from yesterday because this happened right as I was walking out the door of the studio here at Gillette yesterday. And Gary got an email from the one and only Craig in South Carolina. And Craig, I hope that you're not offended, but I'm going to read the email.
No, he called back already.
He did call you? Did you guys make nice and kiss? Oh, so what you're telling me is you blew him up. Okay.
Yeah, he got blown up again.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, he sent an email yesterday right at the end of the show, and he said that you guys apparently have had enough of me. See ya. Craig, I don't know what we would do without you, quite frankly. We always need somebody to stir the drink on the programs here, and you do that. There is no doubt in my mind that you are a dedicated fan of the New England Patriots. Why else would you devote a good portion of your day to whatever it is that you do and make sure that you include you know, Patriots.com radio with that.
Rohan Davey is like a freaking statue.
Yes, he was, and that's why he's no longer here. You have very astute judgment, Craig. Very astute judgment. Sometimes you might be, you know, I don't know what a good way to say this would be. Sometimes you might be, naive isn't the proper word here. Maybe innocent. And maybe it's just because of the tenor or the tone of your voice, but I actually think you've got some pretty good football knowledge. Your emails are usually insightful. You put together some good information, and I always enjoy hearing from you, as I do from all of our emailers, you know, and all of the, those of you who decide to call and want to talk a little football. Yeah, it's great. It's absolutely great. This is what the program is all about. So, you know, if we have a little fun at your expense, I hope that you're not really, you know, taking it personally.
Oh, no.
I mean, my hope is that you know, lighten up, Francis. That's, you know, just the way it is, Craig. I mean, that's what talk radio is all about. You got to have fun.
Lighten up, Francis.
Yeah, you got to have fun at other people's expense. That's what we do here. We live for that every day. One of the greatest phrases, I think, in all of moviedom. Lighten up, Francis.
Lighten up, Francis.
And the movie's from?
Are you honestly seeing if I don't know this?
Well, I figured you'd probably know. Okay. Stripes. Thank you. Well, the best, one of the best, funniest Bill Murray movies that I can recall. Anyway, so let's get to some other news of the day as well around the NFL. And I would also ask you, as far as our question of the day is concerned, actually, they kind of stole my thunder a little bit a little while ago in trying to come up with a comparison, contrast, style between Chad Johnson, who we all know is kind of out there for the Bengals and has his own reputation for being a little bit, shall we say, funky, with a guy like Randy Moss, who really hasn't been out there with the exception of a couple of his, you know, infamous acts, like when he mooned the fans in Green Bay, which I actually thought was hilarious, but I understand why people, you know, could be offended at something like that. You know, the inevitable comparisons of having two somewhat, how about this for a word, Gary, two somewhat recalcitrant receivers. I like that one. He's working on something. Okay. Recalcitrant receivers.
Wow.
Quickly, go to your, you know, Wikipedia and see if you can figure that one out, huh? And I know that the inevitable comparisons are going to come between the two leading into the matchup next Monday. So my own thought was why don't we kind of play off of that a little bit and play a you know, would ya? And seems like they kind of beat me to the punch. But, you know, if you didn't have a chance to get into that, then I would certainly welcome your comments in a best case scenario. Okay. You know, where would you take Chad Johnson over Randy Moss? Because I think the majority of you would take Randy Moss over Chad Johnson, right? I mean, I don't think there's any great shakes about that. But in what situation would you take a Chad Johnson, or for that matter, a T.J. Houshmandzadeh, or for that matter, a Terrell Owens? And we'll talk more about that, I think, in about 2 weeks when they get ready to face each other with the Dallas Cowboys. But, you know, Randy Moss fulfills a role that these teams have had, and it was one of the areas of this Patriots football team that they really didn't match up well with. They managed to find a way to win. I mean, last October the 1st, the Patriots went to Cincinnati and bludgeoned the Bengals. And I think most everybody feels like the same thing's going to happen this next Monday night. You know, it's different year, different game, different night, different set of circumstances, different players, largely for the better for New England. But you can't compare year to year. And when people say, oh, and I heard a friend of mine say this last night, I said, oh, didn't they beat the crud out of the Bengals last year? Oh, then this won't be much of a game then, will it? And I'm like, well, not necessarily. I mean, you know, when you consider the success that the Patriots have had thus far, and, you know, the Bengals have seen, you know, some offense, all offense, and very little defense thus far in a 1-2 start, and you have to say, well, it certainly weighs in their favor. But anytime you go on the road, I mean, they were fortunate last year, and I think everybody realizes that. They were fortunate last year. That game was a virtual toss-up, and if I'm not mistaken, the Patriots may have even been an underdog going into that game. And, you know, they kind of jumped on the Bengals and never let the Bengals get off track or on track. Now the Patriots come into a game where, you know, they'll be a favorite and a road favorite at that. And it's just, it's to me, it's comparing apples and oranges. It's different. Different circumstance, you know, different things, different day, different team, different, you know, everything. A lot of the players are the same. But that's the beauty of football, because you like Herman Edwards has always told us now, you have to play the game. You play the game to win. Right, Herman?
Hello, you play to win the game.
That's right. And so, based on the circumstances and whether or not a guy's hurt or healthy or a guy has a chip on his shoulder or, you know, physically a guy has an edge in a particular matchup or, most importantly, whether or not you leave the football on the ground or you get it picked off in the air, that's the great equalizer. Turnovers and penalties, you know, create opportunity, and they cause not-so-good teams to become a little bit better. And that's the thing that the Patriots really have to present to themselves and to the Bengals. They have to be obviously very guarded with how they go in and they prepare for this. We had an emailer yesterday talk a little about how he thought that maybe this would be an opportunity for the team to, you know, try to grind it out a little bit more in ball control and really work on the running game so they can keep the ball out of Cincinnati's hands. That's all the Bengals have is a high-powered offense, and we keep that Bengals defense on the field in some, you know, 8, 10, 12-play drives that, you know, can go 60, 70, 80 yards. And if you're able to do that, well, then I definitely say you got things in your favor.
TJ, who's your mama?
Championship.
But, you know, part of that also means that, you know, you're probably, if you're going to play that way, you're not going to be in an, you're not going to be in a way where you can open things up. And so by the very nature of the way that you're playing, it's going to be a closer game than the score would dictate. If you're holding on to the ball, that means you've got fewer chances to put it into the end zone. So if you're utilizing ball control, you have fewer chances to strike from deep, and you probably, unless you get a little help from the other team by receiving a few turnovers, you're probably not going to hit that 38-point mark. And if the other team is, you know, put on its track shoes, well, this is where you can have a football game. So you have to be very careful with how you game plan and how you set things up, and you have to be who you are. And as I also mentioned yesterday, the Patriots have Randy Moss, and you're not going to sit, you know, if you have a Lamborghini in your driveway, you're not going to sit there with the car in your driveway and just let it sit there without, you know, getting in and testing a little bit and, you know, putting your foot on the pedal and, yeah, you know. And you get in and you hear the hum of that motor. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff, right? Then maybe you want to just give a little gas, just a little bit. Listen to the gears change, right? And then you decide you might want to, you know, take it for a little spin. And the Patriots' offense is very, very much like that analogy, except for that part. That's the Bengals. But, you know, when you have a weapon like that, you know, on your bench or in your driveway, as we're trying to make the analogy here, you got to play with it. You got to go to it. You have to, you know, use it. Otherwise, you're an idiot for not using it. So I'm not entirely certain that this is a situation for the Patriots to completely, you know, just, you know, shut it down and play ball control to keep the ball out of Cincinnati's hands. That's just off the top of my head. And we'll spend a little more time talking about that tomorrow and whatnot. But what I wanted to ask you today was, you know, would you take, in any set of circumstances, would you take a Chad Johnson? Would you take a TJ Houshmandzadeh? Who would you take? Let's kind of turn it this way, because I know the guys in PFW, they kind of worked with this a little bit in the program today. Let's turn this around just a little bit. Is there someone on this Bengals team that you take? Would you take blank?
TJ, who's your mama?
Well, I would have to consider taking him. You can't coach height. You know, I think that's something the late, great Al McGuire once said in basketball circles, but it's true. I definitely think that he'd be someone you'd want to look at. Would you take Chad Johnson? Would you take Rudy Johnson, although he's hurt and we don't really know what his status may be for next Monday? What about Carson Palmer? I realize that it may be sacrilege to think, you know, that you'd actually take another quarterback over Tom Brady. But I'm just talking about, you know, in a perfect situation. If you had the opportunity to pick them up and add them, it's almost like playing a little fantasy football here. What part of the Cincinnati Bengals would you take? I want you to take a look at their team. I want you to take a look at their roster. I want you to take a look at who they have and what they have and play. Would you? That's all I want you to do. And tell me who you would take if you, you know, had an opportunity to take off that Cincinnati team. You know, I'm fairly certain of the answers, I think, but I'm interested to know how you look at the Cincinnati Bengals. And if the answer is no one, then tell me that. Say there isn't a soul on that team that I would take over his counterpart on the New England Patriots. Not a soul. So that's why I'm kind of looking at it in a fantasy sense today, because I think Cincinnati is better than their 1-2 record, at least start. I think Cincinnati still has an opportunity to be a playoff team, certainly in the AFC. I don't know how much damage they do unless they, you know, shore up things defensively. But I've liked, you know, Landon Johnson at linebacker, Dexter Jackson at safety, Delta O'Neal at corner. I think they have some parts to that puzzle that, quite frankly, I think are very, very good. You know, they've had their better moments, I think, in times, but, you know, there is some talent on that side of the football. They haven't put anything together. I don't know a heck of a lot except for Robert Gethers on their defensive line, so that's something we'll continue to explore, and I'd like to know kind of what you think about it. And if you're a Cincinnati Bengals fan and you're listening to us today, first of all, welcome. Second of all, what do you like about your team? Where do you think the Bengals match up fairly well where the Patriots are concerned? You can play a little would you? Would you take so-and-so in reverse here? Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. That's our topic of the day. Play would you on the Cincinnati roster? And would you take someone on that team over their New England counterpart and why? And if there isn't a would you, then say so. There's not a soul. Sorry, John, your question's lame. I wouldn't take anybody. That's fine. Let me know what you think. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number, and hopefully we can get a little of the apathy off the table today. The Cincinnati offense, to me, when Carson Palmer kind of came into putting this whole thing together over the last couple of years, I think first of all, I actually think John Kitten is a pretty good quarterback. I think he may have opened up his mouth, even though Detroit seems to be, you know, putting things together. They did lose. He predicted, I think, 10, 12 wins? I don't know. What did he predict in the offseason? Something stupid. I thought that was a little bit brash, but I understand why he did it. He wanted to try to light a fire, you know, under his team and create some news and some buzz about the Lions in Detroit. And I actually always thought he got a bum steer, in Cincinnati. But I also understand why Cincinnati wanted to bring in a guy like Palmer. After all, you're talking about a Heisman Trophy winner, prototypical quarterback, slingshot for an arm. He's got the ability to move around the pocket somewhat. He's got smarts. He's got the package, right? But I also believe that Carson Palmer and his ability to be an effective quarterback in the NFL has a lot to do with those receivers that he has. And I think Tom Casale wrote about that in PFW this week. If you have guys like Johnson and Hushmanzada to throw to, you're automatically going to be a better quarterback. Just like yesterday, we were talking about, Tom Brady has a chance to set the all-time percentage record for completions in a season. A chance. The former Bengal quarterback, Kenny Anderson, did that back in the 1970s and completed a little over 70% of his passes in a single year, which is a phenomenal number. Tom is just under 80% right now, and if he continues with any success over the next few weeks, it'll be very difficult for him not to surpass that mark. But the reason, what is the reason why he is having the kind of year that he is having? Well, it's because he's got guys to throw to that he just has not had at his disposal. Moss, Welker, Stallworth to a lesser extent. And that's no slight on the guys who have been here and set the standards and won Super Bowls before them. It's a different tooled offense. It's a different styled offense. And the Patriots have not had this luxury, maybe ever. And I do think that before this season is said and done, you and I and Patriots fans everywhere will be talking about, could this potentially be the greatest, talent-wise, the greatest Patriot team ever assembled? Over any of the three Super Bowl champions, over the 1985, you know, team that won the AFC title and got waxed by the Bears in the Super Bowl, over great teams in the 70s, in the late 70s especially, you know, the old school days, these are the eras that, you know, as, you know, somewhat of a Patriots historian, and I know there are probably those of you who know some of the ins and outs of it a little better than I do. You know, I've been following the Patriots for 20 years closely. I've worked for them for 15 years, but some of you I know go back to the beginning, you know, in the early 60s, 47 years ago. But I do think that this team will have a chance to stake a claim based on what we've seen thus far. And again, it's just a small sampling. We're talking about 3 weeks. But this team will have a chance to put itself right up there with any of the great teams, certainly, that this franchise has ever put on a football field. So we'll be asking ourselves that very question before too long, I think. You may already be asking yourself that question right now. Possible. When you consider the individual talent that's on this field. But let's wait just a smidge longer here to see, A, everybody stay healthy, if that can happen, because obviously injuries do play a part in every team every year. And B, how these, you know, talented individuals progress. Do they fulfill their promise? Do they fall short? Do they get an opportunity to fulfill that promise? In other words, a guy like Dante Stallworth, I mean, we all think, you know, he's a pretty good receiver, but, you know, will he have the ball thrown to him enough to really be a factor? And if he doesn't have the ball thrown to him enough, well, why is that? Maybe because a guy like Moss is just phenomenal and nobody can guard him. Who knows? Nobody can cover him. Who knows? We'll let this process begin to kind of work itself out, but I think that will be an interesting question coming up. Craig, glad to see that you've emailed us back. Thank you. Welcome back into the fold here, buddy. And Craig in South Carolina says, I would take Chad Johnson over T.O. any day. Not because of the cancer issue, but because Chad is at this point in his career a better receiver. He's led the AFC in receiving yards the last 4 years. He has a great personality. He's hands down the best route runner in the game. He keeps the locker room loose with his sense of humor, but he's all business between the lines. TJ's success, Ujmanzada, largely due to the D keying on Chad. Could you imagine Chad, Moss, and Welker along with the rest of our offense? That would be unstoppable. Knowing Chad, he probably has already had a T-shirt made that he will put on after a touchdown, which reads, I love Randy Moss. That's actually would be a very good idea. You know, if Chad Johnson is going to think of anything that he could do that would attract attention to himself, that would be a great idea. Put on a shirt like that under his pads and then reveal it after he scores a touchdown in particular. That would certainly get people buzzing, wouldn't it? That would get people buzzing a little bit. That's actually pretty good. Good stuff, Craig. Always good to hear from you. But, yeah, Chad Johnson, I certainly think is a logical selection in terms of would you on the Cincinnati Bengals roster. Now, he would take Chad Johnson over Terrell Owens. But would you take Chad Johnson over a New England Patriot? Would you take Carson Palmer? Would you take a Rudy Johnson? Healthy. You know, as I look at the Cincinnati roster, I have to admit, over their Patriot counterpart, that's tough. That's tough for me to say. I don't think that I would. I'll be honest with you. Just at first glance, the only thing that I might do depends on the side of the ball. I might take a healthy and Delta O'Neal over an Ellis Hobbs, but I don't know. I don't know. That even might be a stretch. You might want to go with youth in particular, in that particular instance. But I'd say that would certainly be a possibility. What about you? Jimmy in Orlando Guys, great show. The T.O. Moss comparison is right on. It's apples to oranges. Moss is a totally different style of receiver. However, not being a Moss follower until now, I'm hearing smack down here in Florida from people who are telling me what Moss will do soon. They're mind readies down here. Implode. He'll start whining as soon as he doesn't get his quota, and he'll be disruptive to the team. All I can say to these people is simply Moss is not the team. He is one weapon of many. If he were to blow up or blow a tire, we would still continue to win and finally end the flap, pin of the gums, with shut up and go sit down. He says, P.S., I go back to the Plunkett days, and I remember that game still. Lousy ref. Ha! He knows what I was talking about there. Okay. So, at any rate, thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate that. Absolutely. And you're right about the T.O. Moss comparison. It is a bit apples and oranges, but, you know, who's the better receiver? Well, you know, if I really wanted to, I mean, why do you get a receiver? You get a receiver because you like to throw the ball. And generally when you throw the ball, you're not a dink and dunk kind of guy. You like to go deep, right? I think that Moss is a better deep threat than T.O., and therefore I'm going to take Moss over T.O. But if I really, if my game plan offensively was to cross and to be physical and pound people and play smash-mouth football, I think I might consider Terrell Owens in that particular instance because I know he'll go over the middle to get a ball. And he can be physical right back with a defensive back. Most of the time, who is somewhat undersized compared to he, compared to who he is. So, you know, a little different, but I do believe that, you know, there is an opportunity and there is a situation in which you might take him. Andrew, who says he's a Pats fan listening in Central Florida. Hey, Andrew. At this point, I'll take TJ Who's Your Mama over Stallworth or Gaffney.
TJ Who's Your Mama?
I just haven't seen enough of Stallworth to know what he can contribute. Okay. I think that's a fair assessment based on, you know, knowing what you know of a guy like Hoosier Manzada and the fact that you haven't seen enough of Stallworth, at least as a Patriot, to think, well, he might be a better choice. I think that's actually, that's a worthy selection. Worthy selection. If we're playing, would you? Bengals players you'd take over their quote-unquote Patriot counterparts. Hoosier Manzada maybe over Stallworth or Gaffney, whoever ends up lining up, I guess, is the number two receiver. Fair assessment. What about you? Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's our question of the day. We're anticipating being joined by Ron Jaworski in just a little bit. Gary, are we gonna? Do you want to try to sneak in a break before that happens? Or we're just going to hang on here and I'll just do a soft chew? Okay. we're calling him. Oh, okay. I like that. See, that's, you know, it's having a little power in your hands that way. Beautiful. All right. Well, we'll wait until we can hook up with Mr. Jaworski here momentarily, and then we'll jump into it just a little bit. Kenneth says, Cincy, anyone who isn't worried about Cincinnati needs to take another look at that team. The Patriots will most likely win the game, and the Bengals' defense is terrible. If the Browns can score 51 of the Bengals, who can't? But there are some serious offensive weapons on that team. Rudy Johnson is a very good running back than any team would recruit. Palmer's great. Hushman Zada, or Hushman can't spell it, he says. And Chad Johnson are a dynamic team. Would I take Palmer over Brady? No, but barely no. Would I take Rudy over Maroney? Well, the only reason I say no here is because Maroney has a lot more years ahead of him than Rudy does. Since Sammy Morris seems to be playing a lot of running back, I'd take Rudy over Sammy. I'd take Hush over Stallworth, but I wouldn't trade for Chad Johnson over Randy Moss, at least not this year. Ken, thanks for the email. I'll get to more of that in just a little bit. In the meantime, I'd like to welcome onto the program Ron Jaworski, who, of course, you know from ESPN television, Monday Night Football as well, joining the booth this year, former Philadelphia Eagles quarterback. Ron, it's great to talk with you. How are you today?
Fantastic. A pleasure being with you. I'm sitting in my office at NFL Films breaking down the Bills Patriots as we speak. Very impressed, by the way.
Well, and tell me what your thoughts are and what in particular impresses you.
Yeah, I think the overall balance, I went through the defense about an hour ago, and very similar to what the Patriots have done in the past. You know, they play with tremendous discipline. Every individual understands their responsibility within the design scheme, and they execute it. Just once again, a well-disciplined defensive team. On the offensive side, I'm halfway through this Buffalo game right now, and what I found kind of interesting, you know, early in the ball game, they came out with more of a, you know, a power style of offense, what I call their heavy formation with, you know, three tackles on the field, two tight ends, and tried to run the football, little power game. Didn't work. They immediately went to the wide open offense and now just moving the ball up and down the field. pretty much at will. But, you know, just as I, before I came on, I heard you're talking about Randy Moss, and obviously, you know, his performance so far has garnered the interest of most people around the country. But to me, what's been most impressive has been the offensive line.
Just, we also talked a little bit about that subject last week, but the offensive line, the fact is that it's taken them, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 years to sort of create these disparate pieces of the puzzle. But what they've done is they've stayed consistent, they've stayed solid, and they've learned how to interchange the parts where a guy like, you know, Russ Hochstein can come in and play any position on that line, and this team doesn't miss a beat. They've really created something there.
Yeah, and I would call it versatility up front.
Right.
You know, when you have that type of versatility in the offensive line, you know, you could have a balanced running game. And a lot of times when we talk about balance on offense, people mostly equate it to, well, you run the ball 50% of the time, you throw it 50% of the time. When I try to talk about balance, I talk about balance in the running game of the types of runs you could have. Can you have the power running game, you know, when you need that third down and one to run between the tackles? Can you have those explosive plays on the outside where you can, you know, hold the corner and allow a running back to get to the outside? Then can you run the toss game to just definitely try to get to the outside? What I'm seeing now with the Patriots offense, they are developing all those dimensions of the running game. Very difficult to stop that style of running attack when, you know, you can attack the field sideline to sideline in your running game and not only vertically in the passing game.
Do you think that just off the top of your head here, you know, knowing that Cincinnati going into this matchup on Monday night has a dynamic offense, they got a defense that certainly has got some holes to it at this stage of the game, but because the Patriots might be better off served holding on to the ball to keep that Bengals defense on the field, that this could be a game conducive for the Patriots really to utilize that run and try to play keep away from the Bengals offense?
Yeah, I would think to a certain degree, you know, that's normally been the style of, you know, of a Belichick team. You know, they can control the football, and particularly when you play against an explosive team like the Bengals. And right now the Bengals are a one-dimensional team. And quite honestly, and I'll probably say this on Monday night during the telecast, you know, I think this is a better offensive team with Rudy Johnson not playing. Rudy Johnson just so far this season has looked like an old man playing running back. And when Kenny Watson comes in fact, I looked at that tape this morning, it was a totally different running game for the Bengals. So I think they're a better running team, and people probably think I'm crazy. I'm going to tell you this. With Rudy Johnson hurt, I think they have a little more explosiveness. And, of course, losing Kenny Irons, their draft choice in the preseason, has really hurt them. And they've become dependent on Carson Palmer, who, by the way, you know, you've probably heard my elite quarterbacks are Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Carson Palmer in this league right now. And I just love watching those guys throw the football.
Yeah, I think we'll get a chance probably to see them throw quite often on Monday
night.
You know, and that's the, I think that certainly leads to some of the hype and some of the excitement about the game offensively. This looks like, you know, even though the offenses don't get to go against each other, it looks like it could be an exciting football game to that end, because that's what Cincinnati has going for it. And certainly with the weapons that have been introduced here now in New England, I mean, Tom Brady is having already through 3 weeks the statistical season of his career.
And what I love is the way they're using Tom Brady. As I've watched this team through 3 games already, the shotgun has begun to be evolve as their primary passing formation. In fact, we have charted here with my staff at NFL Films from the coach's tape, and you know they have thrown 59 times or called 59 passes from the shotgun. Tom was actually sacked one time, but he's 42 of 58 for 457 yards and 5 touchdowns, 72% complete from the shotgun. So you could see he is very comfortable when he's away from center.
You know, and not only that, obviously away from center, but under center, he has no problems with the drop back, whether it's a 3 or a 5 step or whatever. If he has to move because of the play of the of his offensive line, he feels secure. He's only been touched really a couple of times all season long. And, of course, we notice overall his completion percentage numbers, you know, are on par to, you know, give him a run at a guy like Kenny Anderson's number. I mean, he could have that kind of year. I think it's conceivable if everybody stays healthy.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about it. You know that he is in for one of his career seasons. And one thing, you know, Tom has not been able to win has been the league MVP award. And you know he is on track to do that right now. You know, and I know he probably doesn't want me to even hear me talk about that, because Tom Brady is not an individual guy. He's a team guy, and that's the reason, you know, the Patriots have 3 Super Bowl trophies in their trophy case, because of guys like Tom Brady. But I always felt he's really been, you know, really under-recognized as an outstanding NFL quarterback as far as, you know, MVP awards go, because, you know, it's not about him. He'll do whatever it takes to win the football game. If it's handoff 50 times, throw it 50 times, or just, you know, orchestrate the offense, he'll do whatever it takes to win, the consummate team player. But I would love to see this continue for Tom, because he's a quarterback that deserves MVP recognition.
Ron Jaworski joining us here on Patriots Playbook. All right, you know, so you've had a chance to look at, you know, a little bit of this football team, and I think most everybody who watches you and listens to you, Ron, and respects your football opinion realizes that you will call it as it is, and I think that's one of the great things that you do well. And the fact is, you've played the game, you studied the game, and, you know, most of the time you're right on with the assessment. So to that end, I want you, if you could for a moment, take a minute and tell us, and tell me in particular, what about this Patriots team needs work right now?
Man, I have to take a while to think about that.
Come on. It can't be. No, now see, now everybody's going to get all complacent around here.
Yeah. Oh, no, that'll never happen with Bill coaching. but what's interesting, you know, and I appreciate your kind comments about, you know, you kind of telling it like it is. But the beauty of what I do is I'm doing right now, I have the game tape in front of me. You know, I don't come in and plug a tape in. And, you know, I get to my office on Tuesday. Every game played over the weekend is here, and I can, you know, pick and choose the ones I want. And usually the ones, obviously I'll cover the Monday night game and review the last two or three games of each of those teams. Mm-hmm. But the tape tells me how guys are playing. It's not my, oh, this guy's playing good, this guy's playing bad. I come in with a preconceived idea. I plug the tape in, I watch the tape, and that tells me who's playing well on both sides of the football and around the league. So it's not like, you know, I'm getting a press release where everyone's telling me wonderful things. So I'll kind of just look at the game and form an opinion. And quite honestly, I don't see a weakness. And actually, what I thought week one, an area that needed to improve was the running of Lawrence Maroney. And I said that on one of my shows that, you know, it's going to be a rough week for Lawrence Maroney. I did not think he was hitting the hole with a vengeance. I thought he was slow to the hole and a little pitter-patter, stutter step, almost looking for that big play all the time. But what I have seen the last couple weeks, and I'm sure he's been coached up on this, you know, you got to put that foot in the ground and you got to go. You can't wait for that hole to open, because it'll never open if you're waiting for it. You've got to see it and you got to go. And that was an area I was concerned about after week one, but certainly Maroney has picked it up. But then again, you know, Sammy Morris has added to that running game. Kevin Falk has added to the running game. So clearly the running game has been very, very good as well.
What did you think of the pickup of Sammy Morris in the offseason?
Outstanding. When he was with the Dolphins, I thought he was a very versatile guy. He has every dimension that you want in a running back. He can catch the football fairly well. He runs very hard. He finishes the play. He runs behind his pads. In other words, when he makes contact, he's always going forward. That means he's going to keep your offense on schedule. Very few negative plays, and he can also block well. So he is a complete player, which is always a good fit for what the Patriots like to do. They like those kinds of players, not one-dimensional.
Isn't there just a twinge of irony that guys like Morris and Wes Welker can come from Miami and come to New England and have the kind of success, at least initially, that they're having? Does that say something more about New England or something more about what's in Miami?
Well, I think it says, to me, much more about New England, because there's no question that Scott Pioli and his staff in the scouting department do an excellent job of understanding the fits that they need for their style of play. I probably got myself in trouble last year because I was really down on the wide receiving core. Mm-hmm. Up in New England. There are times I call them the slowest group of wide receivers in the National Football League, and by the way, I still believe that. That was a year ago.
Sure.
And the fact that what was validating of that point was in the offseason, they completely blew it up and went out and got Stallworth and Moss and Walker, guys that could run. So you could see the difference in this football team now. Like I said, early in the game against Buffalo, they tried to power running game. It wasn't successful early, so what do? They come out and spread it out, and then they began to go up and down the field. So they now have that versatility on offense. A year ago, you know, it was a tight end-oriented offense. Now it's a wide receiver-oriented offense. And, boy, for me as a quarterback, that's exciting to watch.
Are you surprised at all, speaking of the wide receivers, are you surprised the way that Randy Moss has fit in apparently as well as he has?
Absolutely. I did not expect it. You know, everyone knew about the Randy Moss talent, that it was always there. Clearly, they were always concerned about his, you know, commitment to the team that he was with. But the one thing that I have noticed in the film study is the improvement in his game. Now, I don't even want to address the off-the-field stuff, the locker room stuff, because I'm not there. I don't know, you know, how well he's received, how well he's handling it all. There are people that are a lot closer to it than I am. But I can tell you this. On the field, he's becoming a much better receiver. And I'm talking about the ability to run routes, the ability to sync up his timing with Tom Brady and the design of the play, the anticipated depth of the drop coordinated with the depth of the receiver, his ability to get off the bump and run and make plays, which I always thought was one of his weaknesses, his ability now to understand within the running game with a corner up that you've got to run a specific route to turn that corner. I'm seeing those little things in Randy Moss's game that I did not see historically. So clearly he is being coached, number one. And I think even more importantly, I believe now he's accepting coaching.
You know, that seems to be, I think, one of the biggest keys. I think he's willing to let other people come in and show him what to do, because I think he desperately wants to win more than anything else. And I think he's proven that. And based on the conversations that we've heard around here and by his actions, you know, he's put on blinders. He's focused for really the first time in a long time, it would appear.
Well, it's called maturity. I can talk personally. I'm sure we all can, as maybe grown men now, that, you know, we did some dumb, stupid things when we were younger that we learned from, and you know, and hopefully you get a chance to, you know, to get a mulligan on them. And I think if you look at Randy Moss, he realizes how important it is in the consummate team game it is to win a championship. You know, individual records and accomplishments are wonderful, but you know, when all is said and done, you're going to be recognized for being a champion. That is what is most important. I think, you know, with his trials and tribulations in Oakland and the way it ended in Minnesota, I think he realizes now he'd like to walk away from the game, you know, with that Super Bowl ring on his finger, because that validates your career. And certainly I think he's bought into that, and I think it's most important, you know, that not only, because, you know, hey, coaches coach everywhere. They're right. Outstanding coaches in this league. However, the player, they got to convince the player to buy into that. I think that's where the Patriots have been very successful.
Ron, we spent a lot of time here yesterday talking about, you know, things that could improve with this football team and nitpicking, you know, over a team that's, you know, gotten off to such the start that they have. And I think the general consensus was that if this team needed to improve somewhere, it was in red zone defense, since they've allowed the opponent five times in the red zone and they've given up five touchdowns. I mean, I realize that's nitpicking a little bit, but how does a team, in your estimation, how does a team get better at defending in the red zone? What do they have to do?
Well, you know, the key to red zone defense, number one, is stop the run. That is absolutely paramount. When you get a constricted field, you need to stop the run. And I think number two, your safeties have to be good anticipators, good readers. That's always key, because they must always be the add-in. You know, they've got to be the guys that have to make plays. In other words, read real quick. And you know, with the Sanders, with the Wilson, with the Merriweather, you got guys you know, that are good strikers. They'll come up there and hit people, but you've got to make those quick decisions. So I always think, you know, the key in the red zone is number one, stop the run. Number two, get your safeties involved as soon as you can.
Will this team then, in that regard, perhaps improve itself when guys like Harrison and Seymour come back?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, you're always better when you have those two guys in the lineup. You know, you could just look at what a Bob Sanders meant to the Indianapolis Colts. You know, you can see how Chicago played on Sunday night without a Mike Brown. They got torched. You know, everyone knows the success the Steelers had with Troy Polamalu. You know, the safety's become a very valuable position in the National Football League. And, you know, no one plays nosy near the line of scrimmage better than Rodney Harrison. So clearly, when he gets back, you know, that's a real plus. And Richard Seymour is, you know, one of the most dominating defensive linemen in the game. So this team has been successful without two of their best defensive players. It's scary how good they can become.
Sure. Well, it's great talking X's and O's, but I'd be remiss if I didn't get just some brief thoughts on the whole Spygate affair here that has certainly taken over in a life of itself around here over the course of the last few weeks, and whether or not you think that this is something that will linger. Will it come up as the team, you know, may continue to beat up on people on down the line, or do you think this is something that indeed can be sort of buried until, oh, I don't know, maybe the time the Super Bowl trophy is presented?
No, I don't think it'll go away. I think the media is always gonna fan the flames of this, because it was so unique, and you know the fine was so high. I think it's something that just won't go away, because every city that the Patriots go to play in, that is going to be brought up. So it's going to be something they'll have to deal with all season long. You know, from my perspective, it's over, and I won't make the statement, well, everyone around the league, you know, cheats in some way, shape, or form, because I don't believe that is true. However, you know, I do think that within the rules, you know, people do steal signals. They do try to, you know, to do what they have to do to get an edge one way or another. And to me, that means it's incumbent on the signal giver to make sure that he changes things up, so teams can never get a type on what you're doing. So, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, I think it's the other team that must be careful what they're doing giving the signals. But as far as I'm concerned, it's over.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take, and I think most fans certainly around here are ready to move on. Final take then on the matchup for Monday night. Obviously, the Monday night football thing is always a good thing to be a part of. We wish we had it here, but I know that there are some that are glad that it's in Cincinnati. what?
No, I'd love to be up there in lovely Foxborough in that beautiful Gillette Stadium.
Absolutely, absolutely. We probably have a few employees around here that aren't too unhappy with it being there, though. Let me ask you then: what does New England have to do in order to make sure they don't stub their toe?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's going to be to pressure Carson Palmer. They pretty much are a limited offense right now. When you look at T.J. Hoogemanzadeh and Chad Johnson, I believe they've accounted for 54 receptions in two games. It is a wide receiver-oriented offense. You know, with Chris Henry on his eight-game suspension, it really hurts them. They lost Tab Perry, who was their third receiver a couple of weeks ago, so they are really thin outside of Hoogemanzadeh and Chad Johnson. It's a solid offensive line. Reggie Kelly, the tight end, pretty much is not involved in the offense. This is a team that likes to attack to the outside, primarily because Carson Palmer can throw the out route and the deep routes to the outside better than any quarterback in the game. So I think the key is not let those routes develop to the sideline down the field. That means you got to get pressure on the quarterback.
Absolutely. It's always about the pressure, isn't it?
It really always is. Talking to a quarterback, hey, if I get time, I can still complete them.
See, now that's what I like. Quarterback that still thinks he's got the ability to do that. I love that.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Hey, I watched that Detroit secondary on Sunday. I know I could have thrown at least two touchdown passes against them. I mean, that was the most pathetic defensive performance I've seen in the 33 years I've been around the National Football League.
That's awesome. Now, I have to admit, I'm really glad that we've had the chance to visit here because, quite frankly, about 25 years or so ago when you were still slinging it and you had the Eagles in the Super Bowl, I didn't like you very much because I was a Dallas Cowboy fan. So what do I know, right?
Hey, I can understand that.
But I like you a lot better now. Is that fair?
That's great, John.
Well, we look forward to the broadcast on Monday night, and I appreciate you taking the time to visit with the Patriots fans, and continued success to you, Ron.
No, and we look forward to having the Patriots on Monday night. It's right now the most exciting team in football.
Great. Well, we're right there with you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate that. Ron Jaworski. Well, of course, we'll do it on Monday Night Football from Cincinnati on Monday night on ESPN television. And certainly you see him on a lot of the ESPN NFL programming as well. Great guy. And, hey, we interrupted his film-watching session today. Sitting there breaking down the tape of the Patriots and the Bills at NFL Films. How great is that? Taking the time to talk to you.
Jaws.
That's right. Jaws, nothing but. Bringing you nothing but the best right here on Patriots Playbook. We're going to do the timeout now? Okay, we'll do a timeout now. Coming up in the next hour of the program, Jeff Hobson, who covers the Cincinnati Bengals for Bengals.com. He will join us. And I still need your emails. We're talking about playing Would Ya? Is there a Cincinnati Bengal that you'd take, would you take, over his Patriot counterpart? Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. Let's do it in the playbook.
The New England Patriots set a franchise record for fewest points allowed during the 2007 season.
The rush got to be sacked. Another big play.
Celebrate this historic milestone with a limited edition Goal Line Guardian poster exclusively from the New England Patriots, free. And if you think that's good, how about having it signed by two members of that record-setting defense, Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren?
Got to be sacked for the safety.
Take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer by making qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points card and free Goal Line Guardians poster autographed by Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren.
Roosevelt Colvin, wow!
Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact, too. Autographed poster limited to the first 200 with qualifying purchases. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna. Let me tell you about the first ever Game with the Greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching the game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the first ever Game with the Greats. On October 14th at Gillette Stadium, watch the Patriots take on the Cowboys in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me, a bunch of my teammates, and other Patriot alumni. Guys like Andre Tippett, Steve Nelson, Steve Grogan, and Pete Brock will be there with you to enjoy the game and just hang out. Tickets are limited because they're only $25. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on Alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
Hunger stands no chance against the new Bacon Lover Supreme Omelet Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Supreme Omelet Egg with crisp, thicker-cut pepper bacon and Colby Jack cheese. Hurry in today for a whole lot of sizzle, because this irresistible combination of flavor won't be around forever. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Dunkin' Donuts. America runs on Dunkin'. For a chance to win big, visit DunkinDonuts.com today to win great football prizes. Prizes include 42-inch plasma TVs, signed official game balls, and JetBlue flights. And don't forget to try a Bacon Lover Supreme Omelet Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Price and participation may vary. No purchase necessary to enter to win. Offer valid 8/20 to 9/30. Must be 18 years or older to participate. Must be a U.S. citizen. Limited time offer. Visit DunkinDonuts.com for official rules and a chance to win.
Back inside Patriots Playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. My name is John Rook. Again, our thanks to ESPN's own Ron Jaworski for joining us on the program today. Jaws was with us.
Jaws.
I'm really sorry you missed it. And if you're just logging on and you missed that, you'll get a chance to hear it again when we replay this program at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We flip it all around, you know, for you. What's that, Gary? What'd you say? Oh, and of course, the podcast. Yeah. Just download the podcast. Yeah, I keep forgetting. Of course. Download the podcast, and you won't miss it.
This is John Hanna, Patriot Hall of Famer. Download the podcast now.
See, there you go. And you know you got to do what Hog Hanna tells you to do, right? You're going to do it. So do it. At any rate, but if you can't download it or don't have the time to download it, the program replays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time from 8 to 10.
This is John Hanna, Patriot Hall of Famer. Download the podcast now.
Okay. Good stuff. Got a little voice work from a Patriots Hall of Famer. I got a couple of, what's that? Yeah, Pro Football Hall of Famer for that matter. That's very true. All right, we're going to get to Coach Belichick as well, so you can get up to date on his press conference from today earlier at Gillette. And then in hour number two, 30 to 40 minutes from now, we will be joined by Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com. So we'll get the latest from Cincinnati as he covers the Bengals for his publication. In the meantime, Kenneth, our friend Ken in Huntington Beach, California, had sent an email, and I cut it off just a little bit so Jaws could join us. But he also asked and was making a comment that he had knocked the Patriots running game in an email yesterday. And Kenneth says, I guess I wasn't very good at explaining my position. He said, I knocked the running game, not because I think it's bad. I think it's very good. Maroney starts on my fantasy football team. But because I think it's been the little brother to the passing game so far. And you know what? That's a good assessment, Ken, because I think pretty much that's what Ron Jaworski was talking about. Ken says, the reason for bringing it up was to bring forth the idea that we might see a much different run-oriented offense this week in order to keep the high-powered Cincinnati offense off the field. And, Ken, that's why I asked Ron the question. I agree that there's no way the Patriots can resist using the dynamic receivers on the team, but I would not be surprised to see a 60% run, 40% pass offensive play selection on Monday. Are there any worries about how Samuel, Gay, and Hobbs line up against Hoosh and Johnson? I'd have to say that the pressure the front seven are able to put on opposing team quarterbacks definitely makes the Patriots' secondary look better than otherwise, but I feel we definitely do have some great talent in the secondary. You know, that's an interesting point. While the secondary has played, you'd have to say, pretty well thus far, safeties have more than held their own in Rodney Harrison's absence thus far. You'd have to say that part of the reason the secondary, and I think even guys that play in the secondary even admit this, they are able to make plays on the ball based on pressure from the front three or front four, depending on the type of defense you play in. There's no doubt about it. Good secondary play is always predicated upon pressure by your front seven. If you have a front seven that doesn't know how to put pressure on the opposing quarterback, you're going to have a secondary that's going to get torched. But if you have a secondary that is dominant, save for, a couple of guys out there that I think we all, know a little bit about, then, if you have a dominant secondary, then you have a team that can put a pass rush on the quarterback. I think the two things are not mutually exclusive. I think they go together. And that's a good point. Patriots rush, even without a guy like Richard Seymour right now, is doing a more than credible job putting pressure on the quarterback and allowing the defensive backs the chance to catch up and make plays and use their athleticism. There's no doubt that you have to have athleticism. You can't have guys that are slow of foot. You got to have guys that move laterally. You got to have guys that can be physical and that can leap and make good athletic plays. Otherwise, you are going to get torched no matter how fast you are and no matter your ability to stay with a guy man for man. But if you have even a split second in an effort to be able to turn and look back at the quarterback at the ball coming to you, that gives you a chance for an interception. That gives you a chance to make a big play. And sometimes you need that split second as a defensive back. And the front seven can give you that split second if they're able to put pressure. Ken ends by saying here, here's a question. Who should we be more worried about, Dallas or Cincy? They seem to be relatively similar teams at this point, high-scoring offenses with porous defenses. Well, I think right now, Ken, it's a legitimate question, and thank you for the email today. I think you have to say Dallas because Dallas has a way to win. Dallas's offense, even though Cincy's offense is good, Dallas's offense is better right now. And Dallas is playing at least decent enough defense, not allowing the teams to outscore them, kind of like, what happened with Cincinnati and Cleveland. You know, Cincinnati was in this game, at Seattle last week and lost a heartbreaker. Game that could have gone either way. It was a 24-21 game. So, Cincinnati could very easily be 2-1 instead of 1-2. In fact, Cincinnati should probably be 3-0 when you look at it. They should not have lost that game except for, obviously having some major breakdowns on the defensive side of the ball against Cleveland. They're not that far away from being 3-0. And then you'd really be talking about a build-up for this Monday night. I still would say, though, Dallas, just because I think Dallas will have a little bit of a chip on its shoulder, and Dallas will be carrying, I think, some of the burden of the entire NFC into that game, should both teams still be undefeated going into that game on Sunday the 14th. My thoughts, anyway, on that one. You're welcome to give your thoughts as well. Webradio@patriots.com. Craig sends in this one, and he says, I would take Moss over T.O. or any of the other Cincinnati receivers because of height and hands. Moss's height and hands give him the advantage to make plays that others just cannot make. I think it's pretty hard to dispute that one. That's pretty accurate. The question of the day has to do with would you take a Cincinnati player over his Patriots counterpart? Is there somebody on that Cincinnati roster, as you look at, that you would consider taking over a Patriot? And who do you respect? Who do you admire? Who do you think is just one of the better players at his position on that Cincinnati team? Is there someone like that? How much respect do you have for the Bengals? We got this just in from Patriots Public Relations, and Tom Brady has been named an AFC Player of the Week, Offensive Player of the Week for Week 3 in the NFL. Brady's 150.9 passer rating and tying his career high with four touchdown passes in the 38-7 win over Buffalo makes him the Offensive Player of the Week in the AFC. He completed 23 of 29 passes, which is almost 80%, 79.3, 311 yards. And with the Pats trailing 7-3 midway through the second quarter, Brady led the Patriots on two scoring drives that ended in touchdown passes to take a 17-7 lead at halftime. In the second half, Brady then tossed a 4-yard touchdown pass and a 45-yard touchdown pass to cap off the win. Of course, the 45-yarder was to Moss. So in his eighth year for Michigan, according to the NFL, this is Brady's eighth Player of the Week award. So congratulations to Tom Brady for being the AFC Offensive Player of the Week for Week 3. By the way, just in case you were wondering, Keith Bullock, linebacker for the Tennessee Titans, was the Defensive Player of the Week. He had three interceptions, tying a franchise record in their Monday night win over the Saints. And the Special Teams Player of the Week was Yaman. How does he pronounce his last name? Yaman Figures, I believe, for the Baltimore Ravens. He had a 75-yard punt return in their 26-23 win over Arizona. So those are the AFC Players of the Week. In fact, I think the Patriots had somebody else. Did they have somebody else nominated? Nope, that was it. Defensively this week, or excuse me, for the NFC, Brian Westbrook of Philadelphia was the Offensive Player of the Week. Cowboys cornerback Anthony Henry, whom the Patriot wide receivers will see in a couple of weeks. Henry was named the Defensive Player of the Week in the NFC. Lance Lawry of the Seattle Seahawks was the Special Teams Player of the Week in the NFC. So there are your Players of the Week in the NFL. Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from a little while ago here at Gillette Stadium. We're going to get to him. And coming up in approximately half an hour, we will have for you Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com, as we have to remember, keep all this stuff in mind, because, you know, we just roll it out here on Patriots Playbook for you. And now we're going to roll out the coach. We're going to roll out the coach for you now.
Okay, well, we've had a few days here to brush up on the Bengals, and once again, this is a very talented and an explosive team. Offensively, I think we know who all the playmakers are, certainly Palmer and TJ and Chad and Rudy and they're a very explosive group. They've got a, kind of an interesting situation on the offensive line. They really play eight linemen, and they have kind of a rotation with them, very similar to what a lot of teams do defensively with their defensive linemen. You just don't see it too much on the offensive side of the ball, and they're all pretty good. They move the ball with whoever's in there. So, it's just a little bit unusual, but to see that many guys playing on the offensive line, but they play them all, and they're all pretty good. And defensively, of course, it's a turnover-driven team. Cincinnati's been at the top of the league in turnovers for the last few years. They're up there again. And so they're very conscious of getting the ball out one way or another, whether it be by scheme or by technique or by the style of play that their players use. And they have good players in the kicking game as well. Obviously, Graham's about as good as it gets on field goals, and they do a good job on a plus 50 punting. Skylar Green's a quick guy on the returns on the punts, and they run hard on those kickoffs regardless of who's back there. They've had big returns on the kickoffs consistently through the years, and that's shown up again already this year. So again, a very talented team that's explosive, that can score in a hurry, whether it be on offense, on defense, like they did against Baltimore with the strip sack and run it in for a touchdown. And make plays in a kicking game, and have a field goal kicker that's very, very accurate. So, we've got a lot to get ready for this week. Today's going to be kind of regular Wednesday for us. We're going to go through our normal preparations today and see if we can, start gaining some ground on the final product here that we're headed toward on Monday. So. I think cornerbacks work against a lot of different types of players. Different, receivers have different skill sets. So you, as a corner, you learn how to defend all those different skill sets, whether it be speed, quickness, technique, individual route running type skills, combinations of, and then that, of course, transcends into the actual routes and schemes that a particular offense or a particular team uses. But just on an individual basis, I think every receiver kind of has his own way of getting open, even though it's kind of the same route. Maybe, you know, everybody runs a comeback route, everybody runs an in-cut, everybody runs a slant. But the specifics of how each individual player runs that based on his, you know, his body frame, his quickness, his speed, sometimes his catching technique and things like that, it's a little bit different for each guy. And I think corners have to understand that and learn how to deal with it. It's no different than, offensive linemen having to block a 350-pound defensive lineman, having to block an athletic 260-pound linebacker, having to block a real quick 205, 210-pound defensive back who comes in on a safety or a defensive, you know, back perimeter blitz and sub and that type of thing. So, you know, you have to learn how to deal with different players and their skills and their skill sets in a one-on-one matchup. And that's true for everybody. You know, that's what eventually it comes down to. And you have to, you know, have to block or tackle or defend or get open against guys who use different techniques and different skill sets. It helps you playing against a guy like Moss, right? I mean, covering a player like Welker is hard. He's different than Moss. Covering a player like Stallworth is hard. He's different than Welker. You know, covering Gaffney is hard. He's different than Stallworth. And Kelly Washington's different than them. And Bam Childress and Troy Brown are different than Wes Welker. You know, so each guy has his own style and technique and, you know, that type of thing. It's not all the same, but I think it's good experience for all of them. There's a general category, you know, bigger receivers, quicker receivers, you know, speed guys, that kind of thing. But, you know, each guy kind of has his own, you know, his own way of doing things, and that's a challenge for the defensive back.
Phil, in the films that you've seen from the Bengals, have you seen any inconsistency in their running game? Some things I've read suggest that there was a little
Well, it's been so productive for him that, you know, I guess anything less than about 6 yards a carry and, you know, 130 a game might be less than what they're used to. But, no, I think they've run the ball well. They Rudy looks like Rudy. And, as I said, they've mixed in some different combinations on the offensive line. But I think that all those players have, a couple have been injury situations. You know, Levi missed some time and the center. How do you pronounce his name? Gaichuk. Okay. You know, he missed the last couple of games, got hurt against Baltimore, but no matter who's been in there, they've done a good job, and I think they're still a good running football team. Absolutely. Oh, he's just a good quarterback. He does everything well. He can make all the throws. Strong guy in the pocket, reads coverage as well, very accurate. He's a good quarterback. Again, they're a very talented group. You know, I think Hall has, Joseph, has been slowed down a little bit, and Hall's replaced him some at corner. But when Joseph's been in there, then Hall's played the nickelback and has played in the slot. And, Hall's instinctive. He's quick. They're both good tacklers. They're both strong players, physical guys. So get up and, you know, bang the receivers around a little bit. Both have good hands and good ball skills. So, you know, Madu is a very athletic guy at safety. Dexter's kind of a ball hawk back there. Has great feel and read on the quarterback. Gets his hands on a lot of balls. O'Neal's he's had a lot of good games against us. You know, he's another very athletic guy. Great hands, good ball skills. You know, they're all ball hawks back there. Same thing with Ratliff. You know, when he's played. You know, so they do a good job of jumping the quarterback, getting their hands on the ball, breaking on it. Turn that over.
Obviously, you're looking at that Cleveland game and preparing for this. How does that
Well, again, I think, as I've said before, I think early in the season you get some games and some matchups and some situations that are not really what they are. They'll play each other again, and I doubt that the game will go the way this first one did. You know, it's sometimes those things. You know, we've seen those games before. One week it's 51-50, the next week it's 7-3. So. Sure. Yeah, Sammy's done a great job for us. Yep. And Sammy's been a player that's contributed on all four downs for us. He's played in the kicking game. He's played on third down. Played on first and second down. Just gets asked to do a lot of different things, and he does them. He does them well. He's versatile, smart, tough kid. Plays strong, but you know has some speed and quickness to be able to, you know, to play in the kicking game, play on third down, be a receiver. You know, has been out of the backfield some. No, he's. You know, he's a good player. He's worked hard at it. He's been here, you know, the whole off season. Hasn't missed any time. Been on top of his job and his assignments, and he's performed them well in preseason games, practices, and so far in the regular season. It's a good guy to work with. He's a really dependable guy, professional.
How important has he been to himself and Lawrence? Well, that she had a load a little bit.
I think we've had production from all our backs. I think it's a good group. They work well together. They help each other out. You know, they're all smart, tough, work hard, unselfish. I think it's a good group to work with.
Is this the best and most explosive offense you've faced?
They're pretty explosive. You know, they score a lot of points. They've been right at the top of the league in points, you know, every year. What are they now? Like, I don't know, 30 a game or something like that, close to it. So they can score from anywhere. They can score in a hurry. They're productive in the running game. They've got a great quarterback. They've got great receivers. Tight ends are good. They've got a good blocking fullback, good offensive line. Seems no matter who they put out there, they score. And they, you know, they use a lot of different people. They've had different receiver combinations. You know, Rudy missed the second half, most of the second half last week against Seattle. Watson ran the ball well. Was very productive, so it almost didn't seem to matter who's out there. But that ball's moving down the field. It's usually moving pretty fast.
Do you look at Johnson and Uchimizadeh as the same type of receivers on both sides of the field, or can one do different things than the other can do?
I think that there are a lot of similarities. They use them in different spots. TJ plays mainly in the slot, not exclusively, but mainly. Chad plays mainly outside, but not exclusively. I think that if they wanted to switch them, they probably could, but I think they got them where they think they're most productive, and there's a balance there. They're usually on opposite sides, so it's hard to get them both. Even if you get them, it's hard to get either one of them, but it's, you know, it's unusual to see them together. They do it a little bit, but not a whole lot. I think they don't want you to, you know, be able to go and load up over on that side. So, you know, different, but kind of similar to the Indianapolis program where it's, you know, Harrison and Wayne usually aren't together. They're, you know, they're on opposite sides. It makes it harder to get both of them. So, but they're both quick. They're both fast. They're both good after the catch. Real good hands. They're good route runners. You know, the interesting thing about those guys, a lot of times when they catch the ball, is there's nobody within 5 yards of them, 10 yards of them sometimes. You know, they spin them around. It's not like they're open diving for the ball, you know, trying to make a circus catch. A lot of times they beat the defender so bad that it looks like he's out to practice early. And he's just standing over there by himself. We've got a couple, you know, I showed the team a couple today where they're standing in the end zone, pretty much fair catching the ball, waiting for it to come down. You know, the guy falls down or they spin him around. So they're very good route runners, both of them, very good. I think it's always a big deal. It's always a big deal. I don't think you want to play these guys on a short field. I don't think that's a good idea at all.
Now that Asante's got 3 games in, does he have to last year's level?
I don't know. I think right now, you know, just our job as a team and Asante's job is to get ready for Cincinnati and the challenges this week, which are plenty. You know, and that's what we got to do is take advantage of our opportunities this week and in the classroom and on the practice field and film study to get ready and prepare for these this outstanding passing game. So that's what we're going to do. Not about ranking something compared to some other year or some other game or whatever. It's, I don't know.
How would you assess your offensive line's contribution so far and what you think your efficiency?
I think the line's done a good job for us. You know, it's not perfect, but it's been solid. You know, we've had a couple different guys in there at right guard, but otherwise it's been pretty consistent. You know, could be better, but it's been solid. It's helped our offensive production. You know, we haven't had a lot of penalties, haven't had a lot of negative plays. So that's good.
What do you think Lawrence Duroni has done best?
He's done best. I mean, I think the biggest thing for Lawrence is to keep working on his consistency. I think we've all seen him make plays out there and do things well. It's like any other player. You know, just being able to do it consistently, time after time. A lot of plays, a lot of things to do right. Try to get them all done. That's the way it is in most players in this league. I mean, just about everybody can go out there and make plays somewhere along the line. It's a question of how consistently you can do it. Try to keep the bad ones out of there. So I think that's true for him, too.
That's Patriots head coach Bill Belichick earlier today with members of the Patriots media here at Gillette Stadium as we are in hour number two of Patriots Playbook. I'm John Rook here on Patriots.com radio. We've had, of course, Coach Belichick there. We've had Ron Jaworski. And now we will get off to, in just a little bit, Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com to talk a little bit more about the Cincinnati Bengals as they prepare for the Patriots coming up on Monday night and Monday Night Football on ESPN. Still sounds kind of strange to say that it's going to be on ESPN, doesn't it? Just after all those years, 37, 38 years, or whatever it was, on ABC. Yeah, I know. It's a little strange. But it's still Monday Night Football. It's still the only game on Monday night. And I don't know about you, but yeah, I still try to plan most of my day around it. Now, I teach on Mondays, and so I have to kind of like in class.
You know, you're probably not going to be a ballet dancer.
No, definitely not. Definitely not going to be a ballet dancer. I will tell you this, that as far as the Sunday night package is concerned, where, you know, Al Michaels and John Madden now do, I actually think that NBC's done a pretty decent job with it.
I mean, he was thinking, okay, we get the extra, whoa, what happened? You know, go on in, you know.
I think they've actually done a pretty good job with it. NBC has done a good job, I think, in producing it for the most part.
O-T-I-S.
I could do a little less, I think, of some of the, you know, smarmy attitude of a guy like Chris Collinsworth. And, you know, sometimes I still think Costas, even though he's a very good interviewer, he's one of the best to ever do that in his, genre. But he's just a little, what is it about Costas? Just a little.
Pretentious.
Yeah, okay, I guess that's a good enough word. A little full of himself, maybe. Other than that, you know, for the most part, I think they do a pretty good job with it. And I am still a fan of Al Michaels and John Madden, even though Madden is...
Hey, how do you ragu?
Even though he's a bit of a parody of himself now. But, you know, to an entire generation, and this is very true. In fact, my students in class discussed this in the past. John Madden is not known as the former coach of the Oakland Raiders. He is known as the guy on, you know, Madden, you know, NFL. You know.
He's going to get the kick out. Boom, right there.
That's right. He's also known as John Madden from Tough Actin' to Actin'.
Ooh.
So, I mean, he's known for being a pitch man more than a football coach to an entire generation, which I find really bizarre.
And when he can take your center and just blow him.
Is that like you blow Craig up? kind of get that one in there. Jimmy Cinzanoni says, if Bill Belichick is selling anyone the team, all you have to do is watch the introduction of the Patriots in the first Super Bowl win. The team was introduced together. It was a proud moment for me, and even my wife took notice of the class act. It took me by surprise, and to this day, it was the best moment in the Super Bowl. He's talking about what Coach was talking about in his news conference earlier. The win was just that much better, but that moment defined unselfishness. When you buy into the Patriots, it should be as the team and not for the record books. It's been our legacy as a team. We have never had a Tom Brady or a Randy Moss. We've been close, but never had all the pieces. Grogan was great. We just had bad referees. Ha. As far as the would you, could you, I got to believe in Bill. He's got a plan, and I wouldn't change a thing. All right, Jimmy, thank you for being a dedicated Patriots fan. You got to have them, no doubt about it. Matt sends a note from Waseca, Minnesota. Where the heck is Waseca, Matt? You'll have to fill us in. He says, wanted to clear the air on a few things. Waseca isn't anywhere near Canada. It's not even past the Twin Cities. That being said, the Patriots are popular in Minnesota. Really? Really? Matt says that probably has a lot to do with the Vikings dropping off from irrelevant to completely irrelevant in the NFL. I think Craig from South Carolina is a... it's not called you a not a nice name, Craig. Every time
look at that douchebag.
Yeah. Every time he calls, he sounds like he's drunk. Or maybe that's just how people from South Carolina talk. You
Andy,
know,
you're full of crap. By the dawn's early light.
Southern people do have a bit of an accent. Sorry, Matt. Sorry, they just do. That's just the way it is. Live with it. He says, I've got some over-unders for you. He says, Tom Brady, 45 touchdowns this year. You know, based on this team philosophy, as Jimmy emailed us just a little bit ago, and the likelihood that things get spread out quite a bit, I'm going to have to go under on that one. I realize that, you know, there's a chance that he could threaten Peyton Manning's single-season record based on what he started out with 10 touchdowns in the first three games. I don't know that he keeps up that pace, to be quite honest with you. But at the same time, I'd have to go under on that one. He says, Randy Moss, 17 touchdowns this year. Well, now that might be more likely. I mean, there was some talk around here yesterday, in fact, on PFW in Progress yesterday about the record, which is 22. I guess Jerry Rice had 22. That was the record set in, I guess, 87. It's been, what, 20 years? And whether or not Moss, with the five he has thus far, could end up challenging that record of 22. And Matt gives us an over-under ear of 17. I think I'm still going to have to go under, although I would say that there's a better shot at going over 17 than there is a shot of Brady going over 45, if that makes any sense to you. That's what I thought, but I still think that my initial inclination is to go under because this team does have different pieces to the puzzle, and I do believe they will have a philosophy of spreading it around. And they will try to make sure that everybody gets theirs and everybody gets their touches and everybody gets their opportunity. And obviously the defense is going to predicate, and injuries naturally, but defense primarily will predicate who's open. I mean, you know, you always have, you know, your primary target, your secondary target, and then, you know, you check off to, you know, three and even four if you have to, if you have enough time. You know, you've got a list of progressions that you have to follow if you are a quarterback. And, you know, if he's got all kinds of time, my guess is that obviously he'll look for a guy like Randy more often. All right. Asante Samuel, 4 interceptions this season. Ooh. He just had his first last week. We're 3 weeks into the season. It stands to reason that he will continue to get, you know, his sea legs under him, so to speak, as the season progresses here. And he is obviously playing for a contract. I'm going to say over on that one. I think he'll have a chance to go over the 4. It may only be 5 or 6, but you listed the over-under as 4, and I will say over. So I'll go under on Brady and 45 touchdowns. I'll go under on Moss and 17 touchdowns. I will go over on Samuel and 4 picks, in case you were wondering. You guys agree or disagree, and certainly fire off an email, webradio@patriots.com. It's good conversation stuff here, Matt. Thank you. And then he asked me for a true-false thing. He says, Sammy Morris scores more touchdowns than Lawrence Maroney. True or false? Good one. I'm gonna say true, because I do believe that they like to use Morris and or Heath Evans in short yardage situations in the red zone. I think we've already seen an inclination to that through the first 3 weeks. That doesn't mean that Maroney won't have a chance to score a touchdown, but I will say that Morris will probably be the likely back to bang it up the middle. So I'll say true on that one. And then true-false on Adalys Thomas wins Defensive Player of the Year. Are we talking what, AFC Defensive Player of the Year? I assume that's what you mean in that regard. Well, until I really – that one above all of them is the one that I think is most up in the air, only because I think you have to let the season play out a little bit more and see what other teams bring into the fold. Well, I'd say he'd be a candidate right now based on what we saw with his interception return a couple of weeks ago, right? And the fact that, you know, the Patriots defense, you know, if the Patriots continue to do well, all right, let me predicate on this. I'm going to say false, but if the Patriots continue to play well as they have and stay undefeated, then the players on this team are certainly going to get more than their fair share of postseason accolades. And of course, how many times in the last few years have we griped and bitched about, you know, players not making the Pro Bowl around here, about how Patriot players are undervalued by other players and or other organizations in the NFL. And if this team continues to win and have success, then my guess is that won't be a problem at the end of this season. Anyway, Matt says, keep up the good work. I hope to order you food sometime. Are there places other than Papa Gino's, or do you guys just like that the best? Anyway, let me know the details or I can get some food to you. Gary, do you want to email him back?
I'll take care of it.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're joined now by Jeff Hobson, who covers the Cincinnati Bengals for Bengals.com. Jeff, great to visit with you. John Rook here in Boston. How are you?
John, thanks for having me on. The Puppet Genos, I thought I was dying. My fries and fries. I had burger and fries and a shake.
Hang on just 2 seconds. Hang on 2 seconds, Jeff, because you want to try to see if we can call him back. We had your phone break up and then break out completely, and we lost you about mid-sentence there. So we'll try it one more time. We'll see if we can reconnect the line for you. But at any rate, hopefully we'll catch up with him here in just a couple of moments. The fact is that on Monday night, when you go into a situation where you have a team that is a definitive favorite and you have a team that is a little bit wounded, both not only physically but mentally as well, then you got to be careful. And I know that, you know, based on track record and in the past, that Belichick has his team prepared perhaps for these kind of situations as well as any coach in the league does. But I was talking in the opening hour of the program today that, you know, one of the things they have to guard against is complacency, not only from the fans, which obviously I think is part of it here, because BFW guys were moaning about not having any emails, and quite frankly haven't had as many today as well. You can't worry about that, because a team that has an opportunity to score and move up and down the field with the kind of rapidity that Cincinnati does is going to be a little problematic, I think. All right, Jeff Hobson rejoined us here on Patriots Playbook. Jeff, that a little bit better now?
Yeah, I was. I get all fired up when you're talking about Papa Gino's. I was thought that was the one at Route 9, right by Flag Drive in Framingham. I could
nice.
Walk up there and get a hamburger and a fries and a shake right after school.
Nice. I like that. Obviously a little experience in the marketplace.
A little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. Hey, where is this Cincinnati team right now in terms of where they should be? I mean, you know, have you been able even to equate where they should be? Are they on schedule, behind schedule? Are they disappointed?
I think they're really behind schedule, particularly in the division where Cleveland really delivered a blow to them. With that loss there, I mean, I think that the best case scenario, I think they felt was to be 2-2 at the bye, because I think they felt like, you know, beat Baltimore, beat Cleveland, get a leg up in the division, tough game in Seattle, you know, and then you come home and play the Patriots on a Monday night. That's certainly one you don't put in your bag. So, you know, I think they felt like beat 2-2, and now they're 1-2, they're sucking wind, and everybody knows that it's a long shot to make the playoffs at 1-3. So I think the people are a little bit reeling here, and I think they feel like they let two games slip away. And, in this league, you don't get them back, and that's what's happened the last six games for this team. Lost five, and they could have won any one of them.
Yeah, we were just kind of talking about that in our opening hour today. The fact is that the Cincinnati team, honestly, I think a lot of people thought could be and maybe even should be 3-0 going into this matchup.
Well, I think especially after what transpired in Seattle, and I think what the frustrating thing about this Bengals team is you just don't know what you're going to get. They could get blown out. They could lose by three. They could, you know, they could win a shootout, lose a shootout. You know, I think the one thing about it is you can't say, well, gee, they're getting blown out, or gee, they just don't have enough good players, because it's always, it seems to be one or two plays that's a, you know, and it doesn't seem to be a physical thing. It seems to be a thing of stupidity. So that's the frustrating thing. At least back in the old days, you could say, well, they stink. They got about three good players. Can't say that now.
Right. I'm actually kind of watching the replay on NFL Network now and watching some of it and trying to figure out how you guys lost the game.
Well, I mean, it's easy. You know, they had three breakdowns. You know, they had a breakdown at the end of each half. Jonathan Joseph let a guy run by him. For a Hasselbeck touchdown, and they broke down on the touchdown pass that won the game.
Yeah,
and can't do it. And you know, I mean, something's got to get. Same thing happened in Cleveland. You know, and you know, they give up plays in chunks. They do it on special teams. I mean, on special teams, at least you can say, you know, they're so banged up, you know, and they've got new players that they really seem to be struggling there. I mean, this is a club that. You know, has never been under this special teams coach, Darren Simmons. He's never had a kick cover team, you know, below 10th in the league. Well, now they're 29th. And, you know, it's they're hurt. They got rookies playing. But defensively, it's a, you know, you kind of shake your head. But they knew early, I think, that they were going to struggle a little bit with the two rookie corners, you know, with the two young corners, Joseph and Hall. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you got three of the first quarterbacks are going to be McNair, Hasselbeck, and Brady. Between the three of them, they've won 65% of, you know, 300 games. Veteran guys that can fry you. So, you know, I think they knew that going in. But, I mean, clearly the number of big plays they've given up has just killed them.
Where, then, do you see the upside for this team defensively? I mean, is it strictly a health issue? Is it an experience issue? Is it a schematic issue?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I think it's health. I think they're going to get some people back soon. They should have Brooks back this week. And I think it's an experience issue, obviously, as we talked about in the secondary. I think it's a matter of confidence. You know, I think they played pretty well against a good offense on the road. You know, I think they take that away from it, except for, you know, three or four breakdowns. Certainly, you know, after the Cleveland game, it looked like they couldn't stop anybody. I mean, they were, you know, taking. I mean, that would have been an ABA game here with New England if the thing translated.
Right.
You know, I mean, Braylon Edwards isn't Randy Moss.
Yeah.
So I think that that was a big boost for them. But I still think they need to get people back. You know, hopefully, you know, they won't have Genty back. He's one of their linebackers. They're really banged up at linebacker. So, you know, New England's going to catch him. But I think that, you know, defensively, I mean, they're still going to have to, you know, they're going to do what every team does against New England, which is, you know, pick out one thing to stop and hang on for the ride.
Yeah, yeah, I think it seems to be the way that most teams kind of go into this. Flip it to the other side for a couple of moments. What is Rudy Johnson's status, at least as of today?
Well, the fact that he's questionable Monday would tell you probably, you know, he's never been questionable. I mean, well, I guess he's been questionable, but not like this. He's never come out of a game like that. This is, you know, this is like the $6 million man blowing out a widget because, you know, this guy hasn't missed a game since he became the regular in 2004. In fact, he has the most carries of any NFL back since 2004. So that sets him scrambling a little bit, but, you know, they've got their backup, Kenny Watson, played well. You know, he's not. I don't think Kenny's the kind of guy, he can stick him in there for a month, and he's going to carry you. But I think he can probably stick him in for a game, and he'll churn out with a very good quarterback and a good offensive line. He'll churn out a professional performance for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think you know, but they're just not. You know, they're just hurting all the wrong places. You know, so they're going to have to scramble. I mean, they're going to have to run. You know, they're going to have to run the ball against these guys. That's just the way their offense is. It's not like New England, which seems to be able to do a little bit of everything, you know, spread you out and throw it 50 times. You know, these guys are going to have to get those edge rushers, or they have to get them back on their heels with the running game. And, you know, so they're going to have to get something out of Watson if he's the guy.
What does Kenny Watson do in particular that makes him an effective back?
I think he brings a little bit different style than Rudy. Rudy's the classic AFC North back.
Yeah.
Grinds it, very durable, pounds it between the tackles. Kenny can get to the corner a little bit easier, great vision, can hit the crease a little bit quicker. good hands. He's a, the reason they're a little bit leery of using him is because he's a you know, he's a hell of a third down back. I mean, that's why he's here. He's a tremendous pickup of the blitzer of the blitz, and a great out of the backfield. Good catcher of the screen. So you know, his role obviously would expand. But I think you'll see, you know, obviously he's a different back than Rudy.
Yeah, I just, you know, it always helps to have a change of pace back. I mean, the Patriots kind of like, you know, the fact that they have, you know, that style and have always tried to keep that kind of a style in their backfield. And
I'll tell these guys about it. They drafted Chris Perry. They drafted Kenny Irons for that exact same reason. And these guys are gone and hurt. And, you know, it's take Chris Henry out of the mix. Who, the one thing that the Bengals have going for them is they go against the guy who's the closest thing to Randy Moss in this league every day in practice, which is Chris Henry.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he can't play.
Right.
But he can give him a good look in practice. That's for sure. But they don't have Henry and they don't have Perry or Irons, and that's just you know, it puts a lot of stress.
Sure
on
does. Where is Perry right now?
He's hopefully come back after PUP. He's on the PUP list.
Right.
So you know, they're hoping. You know, I've never seen a guy come back the day after. I mean, the week after he's off the PUP list. But mm-hmm. you know, I think they're hoping. You know, I think they're taking a deep breath and hoping, you know, for the stretch run, they get back Perry, they get back Henry, and they hope they're not too far out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and speaking of being too far out of it, I know you'd mentioned earlier, Jeff, again, Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com visiting with us here in the playbook. The fact is that, you know, you go into this game and you certainly don't want to be 1-3 because you're, you know, put yourself in a considerable hole. And yet, when you look at the entire division, do you think it's impossible at 1-3? I mean,
well, I tell you what, the Bengals are a good team, and I, you know, and they're gonna, you know, and people are gonna say, well, you get paid to say that, but it's the truth. I mean, they're offensively, you know, they're a top 5 team.
Mm-hmm.
You put them at home, you know, they played a hell of a game against Baltimore. I don't know how good Baltimore's offense is, but the fact is, the defense made plays when they had the, but they get 6 turnovers, and so I mean, against a veteran quarterback, so you know, I don't think these guys are stiff. They can score against anybody, and it'll be a factor. And I think you're right. I think you know, the AFC North. You never know. I mean, Baltimore to me, even though they went 13-3 last year, and they're out of the gate now, I still think they're kind of a funny team because
mm-hmm.
offensively, you never know what they're going to do. They
right.
could go out there and score a goose egg, you know. And Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh is you know, interesting that they're out 3-0. I mean, we'll see if they got the legs. You know, we'll see how the quarterback holds up and. You know,
it's a bit of a soft 3-0 right now, though, don't you think?
I don't know about that. I don't think anything in this thing is soft. I mean, you can't say that to the Bengals, who got toasted by Cleveland.
Yeah.
That same Cleveland team that Pittsburgh beat 34-7. I mean, until the Bengals can beat up Pittsburgh straight up, you know, there's really not much to say because that's been the Achilles thing. You know, kind of like the Colts and the Patriots. For the Bengals, it's the Steelers.
Right. D.D. Dorsey was assigned yesterday for you guys to help out in the backfield with Rudy Johnson's at least apparent absence. And I know he was a cut from you guys a year ago, wasn't he?
Yeah, probably had the greatest preseason of a guy to get cut. I mean, he was averaged 7.5 yards per his 20 carries, and he also had a 46-yard catch out of the backfield. How much he can help him, you know, I don't know. He's coming off a turf toe. You know, he didn't carry it all last year. They like him. They think he's got a lot of potential, but I think they felt like, you know, he's a guy, he's a Division III guy. I believe he's Division III or Division II, who they felt like just a little bit raw around the edges as far as picking up the blitz and then doing some of the finer, some of the fine-tuned stuff. And they felt like he needed to develop on the practice squad. So they got to take time to evaluate him. I mean, I don't think he's a guy that, I don't know if you'd see him Monday night. I guess they'd have to play him because mm-hmm. just solely because of the numbers. It'd be tough going into that thing with, two backs, I would think, you know,
yeah.
with two healthy backs. So, you know, but I don't know how much you'd see him. You know, you'd probably, I don't know, you might see the fullback probably more than you would Dorsey, but that remains to be seen.
You're talking about the defensive side of the ball and that Ahmad Brooks may end up getting back in there at middle linebacker. What was his problem, groin?
Groin, yeah. And he gives him a little something. He's a very big, you know, he could be a real factor in this league. I mean, he's a big kid, and he can run, and he's 265. He's huge. He's a giant. You know, and he just has to understand the game, learn the game. But he was when he was healthy against Baltimore, and they sent him. He was very effective.
Well, this team looks to be at least offensively, as we kind of talked about a little bit, certainly more than formidable. Do you get the sense though that, you know, at what point, I guess maybe what I'm trying to get at here, what point does this season begin to like sort of lean like, oh, here we go again?
Well, I think it already happened in Cleveland.
Really?
So, well, I mean, I think you can't. I mean, you know, I think it's. I mean, that's happened for the fans, for the players. I don't, you know, who knows when that will come, if it ever comes.
Yeah.
But I think certainly, you know, Bengaldom is not far off of Patriots Nation. It doesn't take much to get to see the dark side.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, three balls in the air to Braylon Edwards, and you know, a lot of people on the rolling suspension bridge right now.
Sure. I listened to a bit of the conference call you guys had with Coach Belichick. It's always interesting for us here to listen to how the other side tries to approach Coach Belichick because, you know, obviously, as you're very well aware, Jeff, we get sometimes very little from Coach Bell around here.
We don't
here.
Get much from Coach Madden. So
well, I was...
trade.
Yeah.
Maybe we can make a trade during the week and we'll take him back on Sundays, but we can get him on Wednesdays.
You know, that might not be a bad idea. Actually, I was going to say, you know, when we talk to the coaches...
From a media standpoint, that's all I'm saying. Because Marv's good with...
he's good with the opposing media.
Marv's good, and I think Marv's a little bit out of the... I think Coach Belichick and Parcells have been a role model for these guys.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I think Marv probably took a lot... Marv's a smart guy, takes notes from the best.
Well, we'll have a chance to talk to you know Coach Lewis tomorrow. But in talking to Coach Belichick, you know, I wonder what your thoughts are when you tried to ask him a little bit about the whole Spygate story and how he tried to remain focused again on Cincinnati. And I think he realizes that he probably brought this problem on himself, and he's going to have to deal with this every week that he talks to opposing media. So, what were your thoughts going into the conversation with Coach?
Oh,
Belichick?
I'm not even. I you know, I just figure that's going to be an interview for David Frost down the road if he's still alive. I don't. You know what I mean?
Now you're showing your age, all
right? Right. So, you know, I don't, you know, I'm sure Bill's not going to touch that. And I don't, you know, I guess you can, you know, Kevin Goheen from the Post asked it, and it was the right question to ask, and it had to be asked, and it wasn't answered. So that's, you know, I mean, I don't think, you know, that's something I think that's probably going to be a book, don't you think? I don't know if that's...
No, at some point it will be.
Yeah.
At some point I think it has to be. What do you think about the Patriots worries most of the Bengals at this stage?
What worries the Bengals about the Patriots?
About the Patriots, yeah. I mean, what do they look at? When they look at New England...
Probably need another show for that,
well,
I think. You know, obviously, clearly, getting to Brady, they can't let Brady sit there because he'll kill you. The guy's the most accurate passer of his generation. You know, and he'll just carve you, and he's done it under the most pressure situations. You know, thrives on a Monday night game, five mm-hmm. wides. You know, I think that's probably a little bit, and I think also protecting Carson. You know, Belichick does a hell of a job. You know, you're talking about another Hall of Famer who's going to get there because he focuses on one thing that a team does best, and he takes it away. And if you want to beat him doing something else, fine. But it will take you longer and it'll be harder. So I think you know he'll probably. I would imagine it's all hands on deck, and they'll try to pressure Carson. And you know, I would think I don't know, or maybe I don't know. Maybe he'll say you know we won't give him the big one. We'll nickel and dime him. That's what Romeo Crennel does. Romeo Crennel always plays the Bengals tough because he says I'm not going to give you the big one.
Right.
You know, I'll give you long drives. I'll let you score maybe two or three times, but I'm not going to let you give the big one quick. So I don't know. I mean, you know, but I know the thing is the Patriots will be well coached. They'll take one thing away, and I think that's what, you know, and I that's probably what, you know, that's whenever you go into a game with the Patriots, those are the two guys you got to worry about. Brady
sure.
on offense and Belichick on defense.
Sure.
And, you know, it's so we'll see what happens.
We're kind of jumping around here a little bit, but you mentioned Romeo Crennel. How big of a kick in the teeth was that game?
No, it's huge. It's Cleveland. It's you know, it's Paul Brown's first team. It's the Battle of Ohio. It's a team that had won one game in the division under Romeo Crennel, you know, and they just absolutely pops you. Tough. You know, it's a tough. You know, probably one that was for once it was probably as tough on the fans as it was for the players. Probably. I mean, that's a you know. I mean, the thing was it was early in the year, and I think a lot of things, and I think. You know, it was a kick in the teeth. It was a downer. But I think also a lot of people said, well, you know what, rivalry game, you know, you never really know, and it's early, and let's go in Seattle and get it back. You know, well, they didn't get it back in Seattle. So now that game will loom larger as the season goes, you know,
sure.
if they don't get it back.
Right, absolutely. By the way, I want you to know that I can still detect just a little bit of that accent in your voice.
Yeah, some around here would think I'm a they think I'm a spy. So no. no. But I haven't lost it, and I'm glad I didn't lose it. So
well, it's unique. That's why, well, you know. I think if you're from the area, I think you got to be proud you're from the area. You know,
it's all those Papagino hamburgers.
See, there you go. I think that's perfect. Well, listen, Jeff, I appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. Thanks for giving a little insight. You know, it's still Monday Night Football, and I'm going to guess that the city of Cincinnati would be ready to welcome the Patriots in.
Oh, you know, we don't get a Monday night too often down here in the Midwest. You know. One of the great Monday night games of all time, 1975, on the riverfront. Kenny Anderson throwing for 445 and O.J. running for 197.
Yeah, baby.
And so, you know, Chad ran by Champ Bailey twice in 5 minutes here on a Monday night in 04. And, of course, they had the big tilt here in the opener. And it's a, you know, since he puts on a good show, you know, there's a lot of tradition here. There's a lot of history. And, you know, got a lot of, you know, it's a great offensive history, and you know, you get the best team, maybe the free agency has ever built coming into play. It's going to be a hell of a night.
I like how you phrase that very carefully. The best team that free agency has built.
Well, no, I'm just saying. Okay, I'll say this: the best team. I'll say this: the best team built in the free agency era.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't think that you'd find too many Patriot fans that would disagree with that.
Well, can't with the numbers.
No, I mean, that's why so many people around here say, hey, you know, in Bill and Scott Pioli we trust, you know. Wow. They're the ones that are putting this team together.
They've got the hardware to prove it.
I would say so at this stage. Jeff, great to visit with you. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you very much. Good talking to you.
You got it. You too. Jeff Hobson, who covers the Bengals for Bengals.com, joining us here inside the playbook.
He sounded like Will Hunting.
Just a little bit, didn't he?
Thanks. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you. Matt Damon, of course, playing Will Hunting in the Good Will Hunting movie. And I actually believe in that movie he did a very credible job of having the Boston accent. I don't think it was really forced or strained at all. Well, I know that. But, I mean, he had a good chance, he had a good opportunity to, you know, kind of let it hang out and be natural. Do a little natural thing, right? Always good. All right, we'll wrap up today's program by letting you listen to Tom Brady's visit with members of Patriots Media here at Gillette again earlier today. Tomorrow's program will be chock full of information for you. We'll hear the conference calls. Marvin Lewis, and is it Carson Palmer? Ah, Osho Cinco has been invited to the conference call tomorrow. So Chad Johnson and Marvin Lewis, their conference calls with members of Patriots Media. That will come for you on tomorrow's program. And, of course, we'll have our visit with Russell S. Baxter.
Yoo-hoo, Baxter!
You were ready for that this time. Russell Baxter from ESPN, the NFL research coordinator, as he joins us on Thursdays. Russell will visit with us tomorrow. And who knows? Maybe a few other surprises. I think we go into the locker room tomorrow a little bit as well, so we'll let you hear from the Patriots players themselves. That's normally a Wednesday portion of our program, but since we've kind of moved the schedule back this week with the Monday night game, things have kind of been moved back a day with our media schedule as well. So we'll have the locker room interviews and our conference calls for you tomorrow along with Russell Baxter on Thursday's program.
Baxter.
And he's all set to go, by the way. He's ready to roll, and he's ready to fire off, and I think he's ready to get on that Patriot bandwagon. He's grudgingly gotten on in the last couple of weeks. He actually had San Diego beating New England. I'm sure some of you will remind him of that. I know I will. But I think he's kind of coming around now, so we'll talk to him a little bit about that tomorrow. Let's wrap up today with Patriots quarterback Tom Brady.
All right, here we go. Surprise Wednesdays. Sure. You guys got all the room you need?
Thank you very much. Tom, as far as your technique and mechanics, is this the best you felt like ever in your career right now?
Is this the best? I think this is the most comfortable I felt with it. For 8 years, you put a lot of time and effort into trying to get things the way you want them, and there's a lot that goes into throwing and the mechanics of it, and it's not just a coincidence that you complete certain passes that maybe you struggled with in the past, but it's probably just better technique. And obviously a lot of other great things in the passing game too, like great protection, which allows for good technique, and those guys doing a great job getting open and catching the ball.
You mentioned the offensive line a couple of times. You want to make sure they don't go unnoticed how well things go.
Well, should they go unnoticed?
Apparently not.
Yeah, they shouldn't. They should never go unnoticed. Really, they set the tone for the entire offense. And more that those guys are into it and playing great, the more that we can establish running the football, which opens up play action passes, which anytime you can get ahead and you can run it and throw it, it's putting pressure on the defense. So we're just going to continue to try to improve in areas that we haven't done so well the last 3 weeks. But this week's going to present, as we all know, some entirely new challenges.
How big of a boost was last year in Cincinnati? The running game was pretty productive. How much did that help you that day?
Yeah, we had a bunch of big runs last year, and the backs ran great. That was probably Lawrence's best game to date. So that's key every week to really keep the defense off balance. And when you can break off those long runs like we did, it takes a lot of pressure off the passing game. But that was a big point. That was a big point emphasis going into last year's game, especially when you play an offense like we're facing too, that has so many weapons and can really control the tempo and style of the game with the way that they play and the way that their offense can put up points in a hurry. You want to be able to control the clock and control the tempo a bit yourself.
Is there also, Tom, an urgency, if you will, to convert every time you're within the 30 or certainly within the red zone because of their offense?
Yeah. You don't want to kick a lot of field goals because that's something that we haven't been doing very well, getting the ball inside the 5-3 times and kicking 3 field goals and once not scoring, a few other times inside the 10 and not scoring. So this isn't the game where you just want to try to get down there and score points. You really need to score touchdowns. And the red area is going to be a huge point of emphasis this week.
Is it a little different feeling this year, knowing that you have some of the same weapons to match? Now you have Randy and Wes and those guys that he gets some pretty good weapons out wide, same as they do.
Yeah, and we've had good weapons every year. So I always... It's like we this passing game never existed before this season. I mean, we've done some pretty good things. So the new guys, Randy and Wes and Dante and Kelly had done a great job. And there's different ways that you find ways to be successful. Coach pointed out to us this morning that in 2002 we scored 115 points over the first three games and went on to lose 4 straight. And this year I think we scored 114. Whatever we've done the past 3 weeks doesn't make a whole lot of difference going into this week, especially playing a defense that is really a ball-hawking defense. Is always up there and leading the league in turnovers, and this year is really no different for them.
One thing Matt Hasselbeck said last week preparing for the Bengals is forget about the points that they've been giving up, a lot of it's special teams. What about their speed on defense? He said that is probably the one thing they have to prepare for.
Yeah, they have great speed, and I think the entire scheme is set up to force offense in a bad place, and they got a bunch of players who take advantage of that. Delta O'Neal, he's got a bunch of picks off me. Dexter Jackson is very instinctive back there. Madu Williams is a great athlete playing back there in the secondary. Leon Hall, rookie, had a pick last week, and Jonathan Joseph is he's coming along great. So they got some talented guys back there. And they put pressure on the quarterback, and I think that's why those turnovers are always high, because they're forcing quarterbacks into getting rid of the ball quickly because they're pass rush. And if you throw it up to those guys on defense, they don't drop it too often.
I noticed you're getting your arm massaged a little bit at the end of the game. Is that a reward for 10 touchdowns, or is it?
Yeah, just trying to stay on top of it. So it's feeling good. It's feeling good. I'm sure it'll be listed somewhere on the injury report. trying to get off that thing, so a little extra treatment or something. Good? Sammy Morris?
Yeah,
Sammy's been a surprise for everybody, and I think he's done everything that we've asked him to do, and he's very powerful and explosive. He reads the field very well as a back, and he catches the ball very well. So he's a threat in the pass game. He's a threat running the ball. He's been a great addition, and he's got a knack for the goal line. So there doesn't need to be much room there for him to make yards. He's powerful enough to move the pile. So if he sees anything, he kind of bores his head and dives down in there and always comes away with positive yards. He's always falling forward too. So he's been great. He's got a great attitude as well. Wes's doing great. Wes's doing great. He's fun to have around. He's very excitable. He's got great skill. I think when he first got here, everyone, you look at his size and you go, God, how does this guy play football? But he's as good a football player as I've ever been around. So reminds me a lot of Troy. I mean, they have the same style. They get open with their quickness and their awareness, and they got great hands, and they're very competitive, and they play the same position. So they're doing great. And I think he's learned. I think Wes has alluded to the fact that he's learned a lot from Troy. So it's been a great fit.
You're right next door to Randy. Are you guys becoming closer in your relationship off the field as the season goes on?
Well, you know, we're around the same age, so, you know, we have a lot in common. We know a lot of the same people, so we've always had a connection for as long as I've known him. And you know, most, like I said, I've always said I'm most concerned with our relationship on the field, and I hope that continues to get better. So he's my locker mate.
Has anything surprised you about his personality so far?
Not really. He's he's fun to be around. So I don't psychoanalyze him too much. You know, he's a great teammate.
Does Belichick keep you focused on the game ahead as opposed to what your record pretty much is? I mean,
yeah.
To not look ahead at maybe some of the teams and just kind of say, well, you know, this team's coming up and you got to focus on what you have.
Sure. And every team is dangerous. I mean, there's no question every team's dangerous. And 1-2, 2-1, at this point in the year, nobody's really identified themselves and what they do. And teams were going to watch us and say, okay, how have these last teams tried to stop the Patriots? And that's probably what more of what we'll see. And we got to find ways to do things better that we haven't been doing, because the teams that we're going to play are trying to attack those weaknesses that they've seen consistently. And we're trying to do the same thing. So early in the year, we need to make improvements each week, and you just can't lose ground. And no matter who you play, you got to have 3 great days of practice out here. This week it'll be 4. So we can get ready to play and continue to get better.
Do you personally look at the teams that are on the top and say, well, these teams are always going to be, let's say, an Indy, a Pittsburgh, a Dallas? Do you personally, like, pay any attention to that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I watch all the teams, and you always know the teams that are well-coached, and you play against these guys for so long. It's like Pittsburgh. You always know they're going to be good. Just the history of that organization, the type of players that we've competed against. So. The Indy, I mean, we all know about them. There's a lot of teams. Cincinnati's a great example of that. I mean, every time we play them, it's a high-scoring game, and we're trying to make plays. They're trying to make plays, and those games are tough. And they know us very well. It seems like we play them every year. But I hope this is this game we really go out there and play the best we have played. Because even last year, we beat them, but we left a lot of plays out on the field. And you know, his first few weeks, we've lost a lot of plays out. We left a lot of plays out on the field. All right, I got to go. Thanks, guys.